up, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of the podcast, Lead Singer Syndrome. I'm your host, as always, Shane Told, bringing you into the backstage conversations that I have with other front men and front women. And today we have a return guest. It's been a while, though. It's been a very long time, but he's back. Keith Buckley. You know him. You love him from Every Time I Die. Now of his new project, Many Eyes. Three songs released so far. One tour under their belt, opening up for Thursday. Newly sober and kicking ass, man. And this is someone I've wanted to have back on the show for a long time, but I think we found the perfect time to do this. And this is a good one. So get ready for this one and my conversation with Keith. Before we get into that, though, a few things I always like to touch on. If you want to get in touch with me, you can very easily. Old school email, baby. Leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I read them all. I appreciate suggestions for the show or really anything you want to say. Totally cool. Leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com again. And if you want to support, you want to throw me a bone, this show will always be free, but I do rely on the generosity of listeners, maybe such as yourself, to throw me a bone and become a member of the All Access Club and get some extra stuff too, some bonus episodes, bonus content, part of an awesome community. We got Sinnerfest coming up in June. That's exciting. Reno, Nevada this time. That's going to be awesome. I haven't been to Reno in a long time. So we do all kinds of fun things, field trips, I guess, if you will. So head over to leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess for as little as $6 a month. You can be a member. And yes, that's what helps keep the lights on around here and keep this thing free coming at you week after week. Yeah. Keith, dude, Keith's back. This is exciting. So let's just get into it. Fuck it. Let's talk to Keith. Here it is. My conversation with Mr. Keith Buckley.
Hi, Shane. How you doing?
Hey, Keith. What's up, man? It's been a while.
It has been a while. You all right?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm great, actually. I'm really, really good. And I was looking it up because I was like, that was a while ago, but how long ago exactly was it? And it was...
I'm going to say 2012.
No, it was 2016, but I still was floored. I was like eight. That's 8 years ago, dude. That's crazy, man. Yeah. Crazy.
I'm still stuck in 2020. Like everything to me just stopped at 2020, and I'm like, okay, that's like the point of Christ's birth of like the AD, the BC. Like what happened before 2020? What happened after? Like not too much. So, you know, it's kind of touch and go here whether I remember.
I know, dude. It's what is time. It's gotten real weird, and you know we're about the same age, and that's just weird now too. Like
it is
realizing like you're in your 40s. Like you're not a kid at all anymore.
I have I'm like out of shape, and I was like, oh, no problem. This will fix itself when I'm on tour. You know, no problem. This will fix itself when I'm on tour, and it didn't fix itself when I was on tour. And I was like, oh, it's because I'm old now. Like that's just what is happening to my body. It's crazy.
Yeah, you've always been like a pretty in shape guy. I don't know if you ever had to work for it, but like you know, I don't remember seeing you ever with a gut or anything really.
It's because I always felt so guilty about all of my drinking that I just couldn't add like gluttony to the list of sins that I had. So I never ate. So I just always drink and never eat. So yeah, I stayed pretty thin. It was crazy.
Oh man. Well, dude, congrats on, you know, having the first tour under your belt.
Thank you. Thank you.
A really cool one. Like Thursday Rival Schools. It's kind of like a dream tour.
It really was. Yeah.
And great people too. How was that kind of getting back on the saddle after a couple years of not?
It was really, it was, it was surreal because these things that I was expecting to feel, I wasn't feeling. And I realized just how much alcohol had sort of dominated my touring life. And now without it, you know, it was like, I just had all this time to do stuff. I could, you know, walk around places and, you know, read and do different things and talk to people. You know, I wasn't just shutting myself in a room with some alcohol just waiting to play a show. So, I mean, it was a totally surreal experience. And I was like, I can't believe that I wasted so much time. Like, I could have been doing this my whole life. And instead, I was afraid of this experience. And now I was this one with Thursday and Rival Schools. I was just so open to it. You know, I loved playing. The sets were just amazing. I was, you know, I was fearful for a little bit that I would be, you know, I wouldn't remember how to like perform without alcohol, but that all just came back to me. And that was, you know, another lie that alcohol told me was that I needed it to perform. So everything was just really new and shiny. And, you know, it was, but not like in the, this is a trap sort of thing. Not like, this is not lasting very long. And I think I finally found good people, good friends, and good music to like be around all the time. You know,
absolutely. It's great. Well, you know, it's funny. The last time we spoke, you were sober because it was Warped Tour, yeah, and you were doing a sober Warped Tour, which is kind of a nightmare, especially for an alcoholic.
It was awful. Yeah, it was awful. But it was because my daughter was just born.
Right.
So I was kind of like, you know, she was born premature. So I was like on call that whole first year of like anything could go wrong. I might have to just go home at any second. So I was like, I better just put the kibosh on all drugs, alcohol from the jump so that I don't get caught, you know, with my pants down here. Like my daughter needs me and I can't even fucking find, you know, my phone. So right. I was just playing it safe through the whole Warped Tour. And yeah, it was good that I did that, but what a terrible experience.
Yeah, you did a lot of Warped Tours. I think your band and my band were like in the top five most.
Yes, we were. Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you look back at that and go,
rarefied air up here.
What the fuck was that? Right?
Yeah. It was but you know, it's crazy because it felt so like, it's some of the years at the time, it just felt so oversaturated. You're like, this is the summertime. There's zillions of bands, not only on Warped Tour, but on the road at the same time. You know, there's so many different acts making music. You can't even keep up with it anymore. Like, this is just, it's too much. It's like, it just felt like, I don't know. It just felt gross for a little bit. But now that it's gone, you miss it. And you realize that there was really a place for it culturally. It wasn't an addition to all this other stuff that was out there, this fluff. This was kind of a respite from it. I mean, I'm not going to say that every band on Warped Tour was amazing and unlike any garbage that you hear out there on the radio or whatever, but I am saying that if you're a kid looking to explore, there is nothing like Warped Tour.
Oh, man,
and I think that's the problem, is that I was looking at it from the perspective of a musician. When I, you know, when you change the perspective and look at it from a kid, it's like, there's nothing like it.
But you guys, I mean, you saw the value in it, though. I know you're smart enough to understand all that like, first of all, you're going to every fucking nook and cranny of America.
Yeah.
Because they went crazy places some years, like when they went to Montana, and one time it was like Jacksonville, North Carolina. Like, what the fuck?
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, when they had those places, it's like, a kid can pay $25 or whatever it was, buy a ticket the day of the show and go see like 100, you know, 100 bands that are, you know, not things that they get, that they can buy it. Like they don't have a record store even. So that was like so important for, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Bands to find those people. And then, you know, you saw it every time I could play everywhere. Like, you guys had a following everywhere. And a lot of bands that wasn't the case.
Yeah, I felt very blessed. I know that it was because of our work ethic. It was almost like a situation where you couldn't ignore us if you wanted to. We were just going to be playing in your town. You know, we didn't ask. We're fucking playing for you, you know? So it was a lot of that for many, many years. And so you eventually, you know, like water wears down a mountain. It's just sort of that thing. We kind of made our own stream through this mountain of a country, and we just kept going, flowing back and forth through it. And it really worked, and it was great. You know, I mean, it really, like, I felt like we carved our own niche for a very long time. And I'm very proud of that. So yeah, it was a good experience.
Well, I mean, did it feel that way a little bit with Many Eyes? You know, you're opening for kind of two very iconic emo bands. Like, you're obviously way heavier.
Yeah.
And you're kind of out there, like you're a new band, you're opening the show. Mm-hmm. Did it feel kind of like opening the whatever stage Kevin set? I don't know, whatever. Like, did you have that kind of chip on your shoulder feeling a little bit?
No, I had that feeling and that was empowering. That was invigorating. Like, there was just so much time before Many Eyes got on stage. You know, a lot transpired in my life, a lot transpired in all of our lives before we actually finally were at a place where we could get on stage. So I really had a lot of time to think about, you know, how it was going to look and what I wanted to do with it now that I was kind of on my own, quote unquote. So I just didn't want it to feel like I was going to have a super group. I didn't want it to feel like I picked up where I left off. I really wanted this to feel like something brand new. And I knew that part of it, you know, such a seminal part of making it feel brand new is the humility and you know, serving the opening slot of being like, okay, I got to fight my way back up to the top of this again.
Right.
You know, and that's great. That's what I wanted, because then you fall, as you're fighting with the music, that's how you fall in love with the music. That's how you fall in love with everything you're doing. So no, I was very excited for it. And also I will say this, very surprised at how many people showed up to watch us, the opening band. It was a very wonderful surprise.
Yeah. Well, people have missed you, Keith. They've missed you.
Thanks.
You know,
thanks,
and man. I think you, yeah, that probably felt really good to kind of realize that, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. there are probably people screaming out for you to play E-Tid songs, which probably wasn't the best part, but you knew it's going to happen, right? Like, you know,
of course. And it just feels like the confusion has passed and now there's like this air of just love and camaraderie now that people have regarding Every Time I Die. You know, it's kind of like we were all in this awesome club once, you know, and now we kind of still got that wink between each other sort of thing. So that's kind of like the way that I felt on the road, because again, in considering all possibilities, one of them was that people were just going to hate this and, you know, confront me about it and be like, why isn't this, you know, like very German of them. Like, this is not so good. Why?
Yes. Your old band much better. Why is this?
Why? So, but that didn't happen. And I was very thankful for that.
Yeah. I mean, you came out of the gate. As we're speaking right now, you've released three songs. Under Many
Eyes. As we've been speaking on this phone call, I released those three.
Imagine that's some bands fucking churn them out. Not you guys.
Oh, I can't imagine. Yeah, I was going to say, I can't imagine. A lot of rappers could probably do that.
Absolutely. Well, three songs released so far, all a little bit different. Coming out of the gate with Revelation, that song, just right away, I mean, people were stoked on it. Great feedback on that one. My question though is the music video. How did you keep things under wraps when you have all these kids moshing in the video? How did that work?
We made them sign a contract and then we gave them free pizza. It was real cool. also though, it was like, if you can help us out and abide by this, you can come to the first show for free. You know, it was kind of like a package deal sort of thing. Yeah. So it worked out really well. It was awesome.
So what did it feel like the night before you were going to release that song? Like, what is that feeling?
It's, I mean, when you're, I don't know, I didn't really have one. It felt really, unfortunately, very boring. You know, it felt like, okay, this is just back to what it should be. Because this whole thing has felt like some sort of abomination. You know what I mean? Like, the day that I wanted to get into music until 2 years ago, my vision has been the same, you know? And then all of a sudden, 2 years ago, my vision shattered and now I got to envision something totally different. So I think the feeling when it finally came out was more of a relief. Like, oh, I just fused these two timelines finally. Like, I'm back to where I belong, you know?
Right.
And it was more of a breath of relief instead of any sort of anxiety or anything, you know?
Wow.
Yeah,
that's crazy. I I know, like, you're not going to get into all the Every Time I Die stuff, and you can't in some ways, and I'm not going to pressure you, but I just can't imagine the feeling when that all comes to an end after 25 years, and it's like,
yeah,
you know, just trying to move on and realizing so much about yourself and going to rehab and
it's so big,
realizing that you were diagnosed with bipolar, all of this shit is happening. And then you're also like, well, I've got to get like my shit together. It's just crazy, dude.
That's what I'm trying to say. It was crazy. And if people understood how crazy it was, they would forgive me. They would give me a little grace, you know, and judging me and my behavior for the time, because it might have been, you know, a little sporadic and, you know, maybe a little manic, but I was going through withdrawals from alcohol as well as, you know, bipolar one. So, you know, unfortunately, I didn't have anyone in my life at the time until my current wife, Angela, came into my life and got me cleaned up and, you know, showed me that I have to get sober. I need to actually go to treatment. I can't just sit home without a can of beer in my hand, you know? So it was like, I really was going through a lot of the stuff that I couldn't tell anybody. Also, because I have a child here in a small town who, if I told people the truth about what was going on with all these people that we know and all these people that are in her circle, when she grows up, it's going to be embarrassing for her. Oh, you know, I don't want her to live through that. So I just kind of did what I did, you know, made some mistakes, but I'm 10 toes deep in that, because that was all part of this process that I've been going through. And, you know, the fact that I got through a show and survived a tour is all the proof that God's just been on my side this whole time. And, you know, I'm really thankful for it.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. I don't even know what to say. Yeah. Cause you know, it was very out in the open. It was like, it was dramatic, you know, it was, it was your sanity was questioned, you know, and it's kind of fucked up.
Yeah, it was. And it was one of those things where it's like, you're already identified as crazy. So the more you say you're not, the more you appear. So I just had to stop saying anything at all. And that was the hardest part, because I couldn't defend myself. I couldn't defend the people that I loved, but I just kind of, you know, I just prayed a lot, and I, you know, just kind of waited and stuck it out. And I really feel like things are finally kind of swinging the other way now. So I'm just thankful for it.
You've mentioned God a couple times. I didn't know you were, is this a new thing in your life that you've kind of accepted or found with sobriety and everything?
It's something I refound. Yeah. I mean, I'm Polish by descent, 100% Polish. So I grew up in a very Roman Catholic family, and it was a huge part of my upbringing. Grandparents, all aunts and uncles, parents, very involved in the church, you know, made my communion in the third grade, baptized, all that stuff. And then something really bad happened when I was little maybe like 10. Something really bad happened with the church, and we never went back, and I was never really told why. And then with sobriety, once I started getting sober and really finding out like what I liked, you know, like my actual preferences that weren't just people pleasing and escapism, you know, I was like, oh, I have all these interests that I didn't even know about. So one of these interests I discovered is like esotericism and hermeticism and things like that. So I started getting into that casually, but it led me on this amazing quest through mysticism, and all roads lead to Jesus Christ as far as mysticism is concerned. So, you know, once I got to that point, I was like, whoa, this is like the Jesus from the Bible, the church. Like, I've been reading about him as he's referred to as this master that traveled to, you know, Egypt to learn from the Great White Lodges. And, you know, he really was like a Luke Skywalker human being in the parts that are eliminated from the Bible. So then I read all about that and like his missing parts of his life. And he's this amazing human being, like actual human being. And then I realized that that's all misconstrued into, you know, the framework of the Bible. So I was like, well, now I got to go read the Bible. So I read the Bible. And then, of course, you can't read the Bible and not develop faith. You know, it just happened. So, it's been a big part of my sobriety since then. But it also is a real like literary historical interest in like I said, like Christian mysticism and hermeticism. It's great.
Wow.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Good for you, man. I mean, you know, like,
thanks.
I guess like in a way, whatever works too. Right. Like, you know, it's like, you know, people say one day at a time, you know, I mean, you got to go get through some of the hard parts and I love that for you.
And I really feel like, thank you very much. And I feel like if people who really understood the fundamentals of the hardcore scene could see that it was like this radical rebellion of, you know, kind of counterculture in society, that's like just exactly what Jesus was doing. So like the punk rock tie-in, like everything about it, like the animal rights advocate. I mean, when I was going to protest when I was like 13, 14 years old, I mean, yeah. It's just all these things I'm finding about this one human. And I never really had a hero, you know. It was like, who's your hero? I would say, like, I don't know, my grandpa. But it turns out my grandpa hated me. But so I was like, now there's like this guy that I could read about. It's amazing. It's like an actual historical figure. It's cool.
Yeah, that is cool. That is cool. Yeah. Who's my hero growing up? I don't know. Kyle Bishop.
Okay. That's cool. Yeah. He was kind of like
the Jesus Christ of the hardcore scene a little bit.
I totally agree. I was going to say Chris Gray, but yeah, he's more of an apostle.
I love Chris Gray.
Oh, me too. He's the best. Dude, did you know Gordy Ball?
Of course. I just saw him.
He came out to some of the shows on the tour in California.
Yeah, he's in LA now, right? Yeah. I saw him a couple years ago, I think was the last time. Yeah, he came out to we did an album release thing where we did this whole pop up and he came out. Yeah, I mean he was like the man back in the day, like local scene, you know, he's like the best photographer.
Yep.
And I don't know if you remember his band Confine.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's awesome. He's still great.
He is the best, man. He is the best.
Look, what a small world. I love the Canadian tie-in. I love that I have this in my life. I'm so stoked because it's such a rare thing to be familiar with the Canadian hardcore scene.
Yeah. Well, you were a big part of it. It's funny, you know, I just put together my studio and I wanted to do a wall like where I hang on my guitars and I wanted to do like put up some old like hardcore flyers and stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, cause I'm crazy. I'm not just going to put up like whatever up there.
Right. Right.
So I just spent probably a way too long of time searching old shows. And I found, you know, I'm looking at New Day Rising Confined right now on my wall.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
I'm looking at Mayfest, which you guys played. I found all of these old flyers.
I remember that.
And,
oh my God.
Yeah. And it's, but I mean, I probably have E-Tid on my wall. I have 210 flyers on my wall.
That's so cool. And there's
probably 10 or 12 E-Tid mentions. And most of them are in Southern Ontario because you were basically a part of the Southern Ontario hardcore scene.
That was our first show. Our first show was in Southern Ontario at the Sonic Onion.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So like we started in Canada.
Yeah. It's funny, we could talk about that all day long, but you know what I did want to mention? I have it in my notes here. When I heard Future Proof, I was like, is this Gord Downie? Like, this sounds like Tragically Hip.
No way.
And then I listened to it a few times and I was like, this sounds just like Tragically Hip. And I don't know if that's a band that was at all an influence, but like, cause it's the most Canadian thing. But
it's
like,
okay. So it's, I'm so excited. Sorry. I just want to, sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I mean, it's just, that's it. I mean, I just couldn't believe it. I was like, he's got to know the hip because like,
I do know the hip. And it's so funny because I've been trying to explain to my wife, who's from South Carolina, what it is about the Tragically Hip, because they weren't on the radio down there. And that's something you don't understand when you're little, is you hear all these Canadian songs, these Canadian bands, and you just think they're universal because you haven't traveled yet and the internet's not available. And then you do travel and you're like, no one's heard of Tragically Hip, you know, because they're from Canada. Nobody's heard of these Canadian bands that Buffalonians are getting on the radio all the time. So I was trying to explain this to my wife and I was trying to explain it, Gord, to her. And you know, so every time the Tragically Hip comes on the radio now, I turn it up and she goes, oh, there you go. Like, now she recognizes his voice. And yesterday she's like, oh, there you go, another song. So I turn it up and we're listening. I'm like, yeah, his voice is amazing. She's like, I don't know, it's kind of an acquired taste. Like,
it is right, an acquired taste.
I get that.
And I'll be honest, like back, you know, in the 90s when I was like only wanted to listen to double time punk rock and like breakdowns and shit, like I was not a fan.
Right.
Like ahead by a century, I like would turn that shit off immediately.
Yeah.
But it's weird because now when you're in your 40s, like all of a sudden I like all this because it's fucking uncle dad music. Rock? What the hell
because
happened
it's
to me?
Uncle music. Yes, that's exactly right. It's just that. But it's not bad. It's just like when you hear it when you're young, it just doesn't resonate with you yet, you know, but you're like, maybe one day I'll understand that. That was kind of what it was like for me.
Dude, I love,
like, I don't get it yet.
All of a sudden I love Tom Petty, Bryan Adams.
Me too.
Like, this is my shit now.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. Tom Petty is real good. Real good.
Bizarre. But yes, I hear the ghost of Gord Downie in your voice, and I was floored, man.
Well, thank you, man. That's very, very interesting. Thank you. I take that as a compliment. Other people might not, but I do.
Well, I mean, you didn't. That no one's mentioned that. You didn't think about that at all.
No, because I have to talk to a Canadian for someone to even reference that. That's just not in their zeitgeist. No.
That is crazy, man.
Oh, that's really funny. Thank you. Okay.
No, of course. And you're going to listen to this later and be like, do I really sound like him? And you're like,
I'm going to go listen to Tragically Hip now all day for night. I'm going to listen all day for night. What's up?
So you've released three songs. Mentioned two of them. The other, Mystic Chord, which is kind of raw, like fast punk. Mm-hmm. I love that one too. What's the plan? Do you guys have a whole record recorded? Are you guys going to get signed? Are you signed? Can you talk about that? What's happening?
Yeah. So the record is recorded. We are kind of like it's with Jamie Josta, everything's just kind of a handshake. So yeah, I mean, we're just putting it out through Jamie's label.
Okay.
And we don't really know when. We're going to kind of use the tour as a gauge really to see like, did people like it? I mean, because there's it's not just are people smiling, are they not smiling? Like, there's other factors which I didn't realize. Like people, so you play a show early on in the tour, and then by the middle of the tour, people have watched videos online, and now they're singing along to songs that you haven't released yet,
right? Right.
Because they're watching the videos online. So I didn't realize that had gone on ever. Like that, I'm never in a band that's gone on with. So it started happening, and I was like, this is great. Like this is a really good sign. So we were talking about like pushing the record up now. We just have it. We're just waiting to see like, you know, what the temperature of the room.
Cool. Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Can't wait. And,
Thanks, man.
You know, Jamie Josta, obviously a guy you've known forever.
Yeah.
Since Hatebreed was like a tiny little band from Connecticut or whatever they were.
Yeah. Yep.
And he kind of like put this together a little bit, right? With Charlie and Nick.
That's kind of cool. It was cool, and it was really one of those kind of the light in the darkness that I needed, because, you know, it was at a time when everyone was questioning my sanity and nobody would touch me. Like, I didn't have any, you know, no friends were calling to check on me. It was one of those, like, I was poisonous as far as a lot of people were concerned. So when Jamie reached out, not only to just check on me, but to offer a suggestion of people to, like, actually get involved with again when I was afraid that like the whole, you know, I've kind of realized that like, you know, obviously I'm going to sensationalize it. I'm not big enough to affect the whole of anything, but I did fear that every one of my personal relationships within a certain, you know, friend group or industry had fizzled out. So I was like, nobody's going to even like want to work with me now. He's like, yeah, I got these two guys. They're my studio musicians. They write all the time. They write for D. They blah, blah, blah. So I was like, okay, if you approve of them, I'm down. Like, I trust you. So yeah, I went down and met up, and it was great. We just started writing immediately.
And yet again, two brothers in a band.
Yet again, two brothers.
At least you're not part of it this time.
It's so strange. It's really strange because so like, I don't have family dynamics. Like I'm excommunicated from my family, but the Many Eyes guys, it's two brothers, you know, and then the bass player has this insanely cool relationship with his dad, where his dad's like his best friend.
Nice.
So it's like, I'm just in the presence of all these beautiful family relationships. It's just like the Price is Right loser horn is constantly playing, but it's like, I love seeing it. I love the dynamics. It's great.
I'll get my producer to put that in the show. Dun, 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 yeah. No, that's great. But, you know, I had that in my list of questions too. You know, like you tour with roughly the same group of guys for 25 years, like since you're literal children.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just kind of get into the same habits, probably a lot of them bad habits.
Yeah. Awful.
And you do things the same way. And it's like, you know, you shouldn't be doing things the same way when you're 17 as when you're, or whatever, however old you were when you started touring, you know, as when you're in your early 40s, mid 40s.
Right.
And like, you know, was that really refreshing just to kind of like, you get to like the hotel and, you know, you just kind of do things like an adult instead of children?
It was so amazing. It was so, because, a lot of the problems, I won't touch on it too specifically, but a lot of the problems moving out of the last phase and into a new phase, I'll say, moving across that dividing line of BC to AD.
Yeah.
It was me getting sober and realizing that I was doing a lot of things very immaturely. And not only me, but the other people that I was surrounded with. We were doing things in a way that was really difficult. We were working really hard and not smart. And so I was like, let's try this. This will work. We don't have to do it this way. And I think too many changes at once in one person, when you're used to one person behaving a certain way for a very long time,
sure,
and suddenly they're behaving differently and they're making different choices, it's like mutiny. You know, that's how it's taken. It's taken as an actual mutiny. So, but now that I've gotten to the point where I can see what's smarter and what's harder and avoid the what's harder. And yeah, just doing adult stuff, like real human being activities where you're not living like an animal. It's nice. And it's not like, oh, I deserve a spa day every day, but no, like you're just a human being that has to function on a planet. Like, just take care of yourself, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you've always been a great writer. I mean, not just with lyrics, but also with books. Is this something that you're doing more now as you're sober? Because they always say, you know, you have so much more time.
Right.
But you managed to find some time to do writing before. Because, like, I don't know. I don't know how I would ever find time to write a book, let alone two books. You know, like, else is going on in your life now with all this newfound time?
So, you know, I realized that the book writing was a huge distraction for me. It was a way to just completely escape wherever I was, whenever I wanted to, and just go into the world of my books that I was writing. And trust me, man, like I could not recommend it enough for people that are touring. Just write, because if you need a distraction, it's the perfect one. But what happened was, kind of with sobriety and everything that I went through, a lot of it is teaching anti-distraction, you know, full presence and, you know, sort of how to be kind of completely where you are instead of looking for a distraction. So to answer your question, sorry, I haven't been writing a lot because I still see it as a distraction, and I am kind of still really focusing on just like learning how to be an adult and a dad and a husband, you know, and I think that that's enough for one human being at 44 years old.
Yeah. Good for you. So how do you fill your days? Obviously, you know,
Okay. Let's see. Yeah. I wake up. I immediately take a shower. Then I meditate. Then I will usually read for about 4 or 5 hours. Then I'll eat lunch. Then if, I have my daughter, this is all assuming I've dropped my daughter off at school before I did all of this. And then I'll go pick her up, and then she'll come home, and then we'll just play. There's so much playing going on. But because I got separated from her mother also during all of this, I don't know if you knew that too, but went through a divorce during everything.
Damn.
And, so when I don't have her, it's just a lot of like spending time with my wife, like just going out and taking walks. And I mean, we sound like old people, but I feel like I'm like a rescued dog. I've been beaten so thoroughly that I just need time to like be shy and just like open my own space for a little bit.
Beaten thoroughly. That's a bad picture painted. Where are you living at? Where's home for you right now?
We're in Grand Island, just shy of Niagara Falls. I don't know if you're familiar with Grand Island.
I am. It's like the $1 toll. Is that where you go over the bridge?
$1 toll. Yep,
yeah. Yeah, I know it very well.
Yeah. it's wild. This was always just a flyover zone for me growing up in Buffalo. Like, you don't stop in Grand Island for anything unless you're like a little kid and there was this amusement park, but that closed down.
Yeah.
So it's kind of just like everyone just flies through it on the thruway, but there's beautiful parks around here, and you know, we're real close to the falls around the Niagara River. We're like an island in the middle of the river. It's really nice. The energy's great.
Yeah. No, my parents just moved to St. Catherine, not too far away.
Oh, get out.
Over there. Yeah.
Nice.
So it's a little further, you know, from Toronto for, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it's they're loving it out there too. It's the Niagara region, so beautiful.
Oh, it's amazing. And like having to drive back and forth to Connecticut, because that's where the band is from. So like,
yeah,
going down there to rehearse and just driving through the Hudson Valley in New York State, man, it's just like there's nothing like New York State in the country, which is, you know, I can say that because I've been through it, and I really do feel like New York State is one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen.
Yeah. Probably the most boring fucking highway to drive on, though, man.
Oh my God. Oh, infinitely God. Terrible.
It's the worst. Just the worst. Like, if I have to stop at another fucking Roy Rogers and kill myself.
See that? Okay, but do yourself a favor. Take the little roads next to the throughway. Like, do like the two lane highways. Don't do the major throughway, because the two lane highways, you'll go through some amazing little like Dutch towns. You'll go through some like really backwoods, like really deep woodland territory, Appalachia. It feels like it's nuts.
Nice, dude. I love it, man. I love it. Well, Keith, I appreciate this this talk so much, man. And it's just so good to see you back on your feet with a kick-ass band, just doing shit. Like, everything is just so positive in your life. This is really great.
Thank you.
I don't want to take up too much more of your time. You got 4 or 5 hours of reading to do.
So, yeah, I do.
Or have you already done the 4 to 5 hours of reading already?
No. I got to get back to that.
Do you have any anything you've read recently that you recommend to people listening to this?
So hold on. The book I'm reading right now is called The Life of Christ by Fulton Sheen. He's a reverend. But if you don't want to get into that stuff, and you want just a really cool book, let me see. Here, I got a whole stack here. I would read, if I were you, let's go with the Disciple and the Master.
Okay.
It's an old... it's an old text. It's St. Francis and his apostle. St. Francis. It's his life written by St. Bonaventure. So it's amazing. And I mean, if you just want to know how to live, or you just need to be reminded on how to live, unfortunately, the answers are in the sermons of the masters 7 centuries ago.
Wow. Yeah, they figured it all out back then. I don't know.
It back then. Yeah. We just forgot it. We'll get it back.
Yeah. Oh, that's great, man. Well, what else to tell the people before I let you go? I mean, you're doing some more dates with Thursday, this time with Tim Kasher opening.
Yeah.
That's also rad.
It's going to be so cool. Yeah.
What else is going on? Yeah, you can tell people.
Yeah, no, we just, we're doing those few dates, and then look for the full length sometime this summer.
Absolutely. And go to manyeyesmusic.com. Get, I don't know, pick up a shirt or something.
Yeah.
Head over there.
Everyone needs a shirt.
3 songs now, full length record, coming relatively soon.
Yeah. Relatively soon.
I like that. Relatively soon.
All right.
Good. Keith, thanks, man. Appreciate it. All the best, man.
All right. Love you, bud. Take care. God bless.
Cheers.
Peace.
So there it is with Mr. Keith Buckley, formerly of Every Time I Die, currently of Many Eyes. And yeah, man, we got to it all relatively, actually very quickly. And it was great. So great to catch up with him. And if you haven't checked out his new band, Many Eyes, yet, do yourself a favor. Check out the 3 songs out so far. There could be more by the time this is out into the world. I don't know. I don't know the schedule. But really, really great stuff. And it really is great to see that he got through such a dark, hard, difficult time. And now seems like everything's going great in his life. So you'll love that. Well, I don't know if anybody here listening to this has heard the Tragically Hip, but I am going to play this song. And if you do know the Tragically Hip, I think you'll hear what I mean about his voice in this song. Here it is, Many Eyes, and a new track, Future Proof, on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love, and I'll see you next week.